In this transition time to the new year, our theme today is honoring ambivalence, moving forward. I want to acknowledge two respected strands of behavioral science research and theory from which I borrow today. The first is called motivational interviewing, a technique effective for working with addiction and other types of issues. And the second is the adult and workplace change theory of Robert Keegan and Lisa Laskow Leahy. They help individuals and organizations uncover what they call hidden competing commitments and big assumptions that create immunity to change, even when we want to change, even when we think we're just gung-ho. And I want to thank Stan Gross for a very helpful conversation about these resources and the change process. So, ambivalence, having conflicting feelings like love and hate or fear and joy simultaneously. I think it might actually be kind of un-American. I think we've learned that we're supposed to be single-mindedly focused in a particular direction, on task, on goal. If there are conflicting emotions, bury them, or at least control them. And sometimes we need to do just that. We have to become kind of like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, totally focused on the target as led by the Force. But in the great stories, even including Star Wars, even the heroes are ambivalent. They must go through a transition between something old that's holding them back and a new way of being. They have to sacrifice something they care about deeply. They find courage while afraid. About changes we want or need to make in ourselves, there's ample evidence that we virtually always have mixed emotions. I want to change. I don't want to change. The classic examples are, I want to get married. I don't want to get married. I want to retire. I don't want to retire. But also, for example, I want to speak out about injustice, and I'm silent. What am I running from or protecting? I want to be known, understood, and I spend my time in small talk or in a distancing kind of intellectual conversation. What's so vulnerable to me about being known? I'm drawn by something. I'm afraid to go there. I catch an inkling of something that feels really true to me, and I doubt it. I've been living out a different assumption about myself than what I want to become. How can I give up the only way I know to get through life? There are pros and cons to both staying the same and changing. Even for changes that may seem smaller, like a resolution to exercise 3 times a week or tell my spouse that I appreciate her more often, we find that we have to ask why it's so hard. What is holding us to old behaviors? Usually it's not just our excuses, like lack of time. We're making time for other things, and we're not willing to sacrifice those things. I want to change. I don't want to change. Our old habits are in service to something. What is it? What we yearn for also frightens us. What's frightening us? I think that we rarely get below the surface to mine the ambivalence for what it may teach us, to help us let the new be born and develop as the old dies out. Today, there's time in this service for us to reflect on both what we want to let go of and what we want to move towards. Let's honor what the past has given us, however complicated with negative consequences as well, and also what the future offers. let's notice where we are in our own change processes. We will close the service with a ritual to further ignite this process and carry it forward. Stanzi and Robin are now going to present a short medley of readings. First, we hear from two Rhode Islanders, Amber R. and Nick G., who appear in the photo and video project Revealed, Personal Visions of Transformation and Discovery by Scott Indermar. And the remaining readings are from the book Coming Home to Myself by Marion Woodman. The readings will take us into just a couple minutes of silence. Meditate or reflect on what might be drawing you now, any yearnings, or what you might want to leave behind. Note if there's any tension between I want to change and I don't want to change expressing itself in your life now. This is just a first pass. We'll come back to meditation later.
From the vantage point of the present, we look back and see moments that define the past. What we lose sight of as the wheels of life turn is every choice we make is an opportunity to reinvent ourselves.
The slow, steady movement of time makes the urgency hard to see.
Birth is the death of the life we have known. Death, the birth of the life we have yet to live.
Most of us are dragged toward wholeness. We cling to the familiar, refuse to make necessary sacrifices. We fall into old habits, afraid to lose old friends. Afraid to lose our relationship, afraid to lose our job, afraid to make fools of ourselves. Most of us can only let go so much at a time.
She dreamed a voice told her, "Go to the attic and find a black box." Still dreaming, she found it and slipped her hand in. She gently lifted out a bird, tiny, skeletal, starving. Stricken, she wept, for this bird she had loved as a child and then forgotten. Her tears changed its body into a radiant small boy who said, "I only wanted to sing my song." Such a dream will change your life if you remember you once had a song to sing.
What I learned from driving in Turkey. As many of you know, Marianne, my spouse, and I were in Turkey this fall. In one small, relatively safe area, we rented a car. So what did I learn that has anything to do with today? First, from the process of thinking about what I learned, I can find meaning in almost anything. From the moments and stories in our lives that grab our attention, we learn what matters to us. If you're not sure what matters to you right now, notice what's catching your attention. For what's emerging, that might not be full on view. That might be kind of out of the corner of your eye. So you really have to pay attention. Second, habits of mind and movement are essential to drive at all. We can't think out every move. We'd be dead. I am reminded that habits are a blessing, even if we want to lose some of them. We develop and hold on to them for good reasons: our survival, our effectiveness, our ease. Also, our habits build in a whole set of assumptions, like the rules of the road. Off-road, we may be less aware of these assumptions. They may be kind of submerged or unconscious in our habits. Before taking the wheel, Marianne and I knew that our driving habits did not fit the Turkish context. From our 3 weeks there as pedestrians, we knew that cars, not pedestrians, had the right of way. And cars moved fast. Our minds knew we had to change, sort of knew. Now, picture these scenes. First, we're coming to an intersection in a small town. It's busy with pedestrians crossing. Marianne is driving, thank goodness. She stops. After all, we think, our view is, Turkish drivers who take the right of way are bad drivers. Actually, we think, crazy drivers. We'll be better. The "we'll be better" is unspoken, but it's a big assumption we share based on pedestrians having the right of way where we come from. The jolt from the pedestrians and the cars is palpable when Marianne stops. No one knows what to do. Pedestrians understand the timing of moving between cars that keep moving. Although mistakes and accidents happen with that, stopping gives everyone especially confusing signals. With other cars around, it's an accident waiting to happen. Repeat the same scene now, except I'm driving. Marianne says, "Don't stop." I bristle and stop, even knowing or thinking that I know by now that I'm supposed to keep going. With my own mistake, that knowledge shifts deeper into my mind and body. And I take a breath, and I keep driving. Now I'm on a highway detour, and I enter a narrow bypass with what seems like a tunnel of pedestrians lining the road. Thank goodness for the earlier practice at the intersection. Cars are one after another, moving maybe 30 to 40 miles an hour, very fast given the press of pedestrians. I'm terrified, but I keep going because I know it's what's needed now. It's my Luke Skywalker moment, I think, down the tunnel, you know, right to the end. I start the mantra going, "Don't stop, don't stop," silently. Marianne says it aloud for me, and I'm really grateful now for her words. In hindsight, this is way after, I also noticed some shame. First, and it was present then, but I didn't really notice. First, my hubris, thinking I was better than the Turks, that I wasn't even recognizing that I thought. Then, even with this additional confirmation that I had to take the right of way, shame at not giving it to pedestrians, because that's so built into me. I see several elements of successful change at this moment. One is to recognize the pull towards believing that the familiar is safer or better, even when we have ample evidence that it isn't. The emotional carryover doesn't just vanish, even with some success with the new. We have to live with inner conflict. Another, we have to get our bodies engaged and experience the new way being better. We have to know that, we have to feel it, how it happens that it's better. It was important to go through that small town intersection before the tunnel of pedestrians. Experiment with the new assumptions and ways of being where they can be safely learned. Finally, I'll react very poorly to being told that I have to change until I'm saying so myself in a pretty solid way. Within a couple of days, Marianne and I find that we are enjoying driving. There's something about learning the pace, the new system. It becomes an adventure. It feels alive. I see that for me, life does not feel like living if it gets too routine or too safe, if fear stops me from taking risks. I have my limits. I'd never drive in Istanbul or a crowded Turkish city. My limits and how I define them, how I define adventure, will change with age and circumstance. But to use Marianne Woodman's image from our reading, the little bird or the little boy in me is going to become boxed and skeletal without some risk, some adventure. And since I want joy in life, I'm glad to know that about myself.